Hello and welcome to Booktopia on. I'm Bronwyn.
I'm John.
I'm Sarah.
So today we're talking about, so you think you don't like literature?
Yeah.
So, I mean, I'm going to direct this one in that here's your scenario, and this is a true scenario. I'm not inclined
You're not
to pick up
fan
on literature.
Of the literature classics.
Yeah. No. Like, I tend towards the fantasy, the sci-fi, the YA.
Can I break in here?
I'm offended, John. Yes.
You're offended before you've even said anything. Yeah.
It's really important to me to get across right from the beginning that literature is
all
genre.
Things. Yeah. It is everything you just listed has literature in it.
Yeah. So that, like, in my mind, literature is about quality rather than about what it's actually discussing. So, and then sort of a unique perspective. So the person who's done something the first time is the kind of is the
okay. So hear me out.
Yeah,
what right. I was, yeah. So what I was going with that was that I err toward like I go towards those kinds of books. I go for the lighter reads, the ones that you would be considered for a younger audience, or they're an easier read, or they've got simple language and all that kind of stuff. And you say to people, and you would have said to me 2 years ago, literature, and there's no way I ever would have said, oh, yes, I've read a science fiction literature book, but I have now.
Yes.
Yes. So, but you've got to pretend that I am not that person. You pretend
well, we're just
going
to speak to people who, look, I don't know how you guys prepared for this podcast, but my thought process is if you're speaking to someone who says, I don't like to read literature, then all you got to do is ask them what type of book they like, and then you can have examples of literary novels in each kind of genre. Mm-hmm. So that's what I did.
So if I'm that person and I come to you and I say, look, I just rather read crime. I don't want to read your silly literature.
Right. Let me scroll down to my crime section. So I would say maybe you want to read Strangers on a Train by Patricia Highsmith, or maybe you want to read To Kill a Mockingbird, or maybe you want to read In Cold Blood by Truman Capote. Like, there's examples of literary novels in every genre you can think of.
Well, with sci-fi, I would say you should read some Ursula Le Guin, like Left Hand of Darkness, or
there
you should read Station 11 by Emily St. John Mandel, which I have read.
That was such a good book.
It was such a good book.
If you like action and adventure, there's so many. Like, the first one that came into my mind was The Scarlet Pimpernel, because I really love that one, but also The Count of Monte Cristo, anything by Robert Louis Stevenson, like any Jack London book, like White Fang. What else?
In action adventure.
Yeah. If you're like, I really like reading, you know, action novels. Like, I like Lee Child. I like things to happen. I like exciting, fast-moving plots with fighting and high stakes.
Well, I mean, some of the ones that we don't think of as literature, like John le Carre. Like, there are certain people who are like Ian McEwan books. Like, the people have this view of literature that it's going to be boring. Jane Austen's not boring.
Or that it
Dickens
has to
is not
be really
boring.
Old. Yeah.
And it has to be really old. Some of the book prize winners are like, you read them in your miles an hour. Like, there's no prerequisite to be really slow and use really big words in literature. Literature is, you know, about that quality and about I think one of the things that really for me has to be in there is that unique vision. That for me, if you're treading paths that are just always trodden, and one of the problems is if it's old, we don't know that's the first one that did it, and so it might sound like, oh, that's just so cliche. No, they made the cliche.
Yeah. I was thinking more in terms of literary classics when I prepared for this podcast. So most of my examples are quite old, but that's really true. Like, it goes, maybe when someone says, I don't like reading literature, what they mean is I don't like reading old books.
Yeah. I think that's the problem. People sort of put it in this corner and say that's literature, but haven't. And so me 2-3 years ago, before I sat here, I was that person. I would have thought literature, or Jane Austen, Charles Dickens, people like that. Mm. And I would have to say that the book that changed that for me, that sort of woke me up, was Station 11 by Emily St. John Mandel.
Yeah, that's a really great example of a literary novel full of amazing, like, it's so thoughtful and so, like, it's sort of life-changing, but it is a dystopian novel.
Yeah. And so what was the, do you guys remember what the book was to you that, like, either you found your love of literature or you came from a place where you didn't like it and then it changed your mind?
I mean, for me, it's more like I read where I want to read, and these kind of definitions have come to me later in life. Yes. So I don't think I really considered.
You started reading very young, though, as well. You were exposed to it. And
yeah, and I just kind of, I didn't start thinking about this, like about genre versus literature, until I was an adult. So I just would read all over the place.
You like it because often it's school that makes that division,
yes.
Which also causes people never to go near it again. Yeah. You know, if they're,
well, they're the ones that you, the ones you study generally are the literature.
Yeah, so like they make Aircons. They make 1984 looks terrifying and Animal Farm look terrifying. The Animal Farm is a parable.
Animal Farm
and
is it's great.
Really accessible. And it was designed to be really accessible, and yet school seems to make it horrible. Of Mice and Men, you know, tiny little book, and they manage to write, you have to write so much about this tiny little story. As a kid at school,
kill it with over examination.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah. And you often, if you're like you, when you're very lucky to be the sort of omnivore reader that you are, where you haven't had that distinction there, so you can just cross over these borders. You don't even see the borders. You don't show your visa to do anything. It's almost like you have no passport. And you just wonder, oh, this is really good. Oh, this is nice. And yeah, and what do I need now? I need something just to lose myself in for a little bit. I'm going to read this. You know, yeah. You don't seem to have the distinction. But looking back, and when you're sort of looking back on your reading, and the more you read, you most likely be able to go and say, well, actually, some of the things I liked about this book was just how clear they were on the characters, or just how well-defined that emotional intelligence was, or whatever it happened to be, that just was a little bit ramped up, like just a little clearer vision. I used to think about it as, that things get louder, clearer, brighter, the better the writer is, no matter what genre they're writing in. And there's those kinds of things. Colours are more colourful, sounds, the emotions are better described, the motives, the plot seems to fade away.
And you're left with the thoughts and the ideas that it gave you. That's when you know you've read a literary novel. Like, you can read something and thoroughly enjoy it and then forget it 2 weeks later. It happens to me all the time.
Same.
Like, I'll love it. I'll think it's the best, most entertaining thing ever. I'll tell everyone to read it. And 2 or 3 weeks later, if you came up to me and asked me to tell you the character names and like a clear, concise plot overview, I'd be lost.
Mm-hmm.
All I'd be able to tell you is, oh, it's kind of about this and I loved it. Whereas when you read a literary novel, it really does, again, the same thing might happen, to be honest. My memory's not that great, but I could tell you what it makes you think about and how it affected me more deeply.
Also, yeah, with Station 11, we read it for book club. And at the back, or the edition we had at the back of the book, they had focus questions for you to go through at the end, which I loved. And we sat there and we went through the questions and we really, really got down into the nitty gritty because there is so much there.
Mm.
And it is, to this day, I always recommend it. Even people who don't like dystopian or don't like science fiction, I will say, but trust me, it's like the really good stuff that you really you have to read this book. Don't look at the genre.
Same conversations talking to people about Justin Cronin where they're like, telling them what it's about and they're like, no, not into it. Don't like dystopian, don't like vampires, none of that. But when you start trying to explain to them the scope of these novels and why they should read it, it's almost like you should just tell them nothing about it, just put it in their hands
and say, trust me.
Yeah.
There's so many books that you really want people to do that, but no one ever trusts you.
I know.
They always then look it up on the net or they look on the back of the book and say, no.
Sure enough, they're like, oh, that's not for me.
But I feel like for me personally, since working here, I really have learned to trust you guys and people upstairs that, you know, if you come to me, Sarah, and say, Bron, you're going to love this book, I'm going to trust you, and usually you're right.
That's a lot of responsibility, but I do like that.
One thing,
you're going to have me a weird book tomorrow, aren't you?
One thing that after all those years in the secondhand bookshop, I tended to drift towards what everyone thought was the greatest, you know, the best, or the most recommended, or the critically acclaimed, or the like. And one thing that surprised me every time that I picked up one of these things was how long it took my brain to adjust to the author's way of thinking. Because often if you're dealing with something that is truly remarkable, like the highest of literature.
It's a whole different mindset you've never even experienced it before.
No, and your brain eventually goes clunk clunk, and you lock into their way of seeing things. I often begin the book again because I've wasted that time at the beginning trying to adjust.
So what? Can you name a few?
Samuel Butler, The Way of All Flesh. I thought it was the most boring thing that I've ever tried to read.
Yeah.
I just could not get into it.
Uh-huh.
Return of the Native. One of my first experiences with Thomas Hardy, I was just like, please kill me. What are you doing to me? and then my brain adjusted, and I just could not stop. I just started to gobble down everything.
Was that your first Thomas Hardy?
My very first attempt was with Tess, but there was no chance of that. It was like having a concrete brick wall in my head. Back when I was like 20 or something, and I just went, no, sorry.
So you're painting, though, that this with that really, really high-end literature is that it's a really negative experience at first. Did you ever, and then when it clunks in, it's then amazing. Do you ever start one and it's not so much a horrible experience, it's just baffling, but you're fascinated?
Yeah. I get drawn along because it's like student and teacher thing. Like a student will sometimes look at the teacher and go, there's never a chance that I'm going to understand everything you say because...
And then one day...
Yeah, then one day you get their subject and suddenly...
just the right thing.
Yeah, and you're in. And this is what these writers are like. I remember just having a real whinge... again and again. What was it? It was the Death of a Hero by Richard Allington. I remember ranting about how awful the book was and why was it considered such a great book. It's a book of the First World War. And the person I was with at the time was just telling me to shut up, you know, stop talking about this book. If you don't like it, put it aside. And then I was suddenly in. Gone. I was gone. And I could
That's
not see
a
the
good
you
can, feeling.
And you don't see the world again in the same way because they've made you see the world in a different way.
Now that you said that, I feel like I should try again the other book that I mentioned before, The Left Hand of Darkness by Ursula Le Guin. And when I read that was pre working here, and I struggled with that book. I enjoyed it, but I read it on and off for 6 months because it was just, and I think maybe what you're saying is true. Maybe my brain was like, what? What are you saying?
Yeah.
And I wasn't... And maybe I should try it again.
Original minds are like original people.
Yeah.
Like sometimes some of your best friends will probably, when you first met them, are like, you're like, oh, this person is too much. Or is it... Yeah, there's... Until you actually work out what they're all about.
And now you're used
to... And now you're... You know, you couldn't live without them.
It's like getting on someone's wavelength.
Yeah. Yeah. Christina Stead's another one. Christina Stead, you know, this great literary giant of Australia, who's not... read much in Australia, and it was on my list of things at a uni course, and it was crossed out because it was no longer available. So that got me going. I can't have this. But it took me a while to get into it. But then there are other ones. Ian Forster, who is, I've mentioned so many times in these podcasts, they are a dream to read. And you can read them at so many different levels, and you can read them for comfort. You can then, you know, like Howard's End can really beat you around the head with its thoughts about love and value and what's the best thing in is friendship. You know, all these wonderful ideas, but you can also just read it in a completely different way where none of that hits you at all. It's like Jane Austen. Jane Austen can be read in so many different ways, and sometimes. If you read in one point of your life, it is devastating. Like, and another point in life, this is so much fun.
That's true. And it's those kind of layers and layers that you don't necessarily get from something that's not literary.
Yeah.
Which
is fine.
And it's totally, and both are great and both serve a purpose. I read both and I like both. Mm. But the ones that do make creep under your skin and sort of change your ways of thinking maybe forever.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they're usually a literary novel.
Well, I've just read a very recent one, Normal People by Sally Rooney. And I've read so many novels about young people and falling in love at university and at school over the years. And Sally Rooney is a young, I think she's 27 or something, a young writer. But her vision is so clear, and her ability to trap those little emotions, which just flit away from us, we just don't remember them. And yet she's able to do it, and over a long period in a novel, and to really chart this progress of this love story, these sort of changing feelings for each other in what is already a complicated period when your teenage thoughts are going all over, thoughts and emotions are going all over the place.
Mm.
We don't plot that ourselves. We don't take any notice of it. And it's really great writers who can take notice of those tiny little details and then reproduce them, and then all your past history comes flooding back.
It's so true, and I finally picked up Normal People on the weekend. I haven't finished it, but what is blowing me away is exactly that, the minutia and the tiny little, like, dynamics in a relationship that you are never fully consciously aware of while they're happening, the way that she's able to, like, just grab hold of them and express them in that way that brings your own youth flooding back on top of you and all that pain.
You're really selling this book to me, guys.
Yeah. Well, it's been listed. I mean, it's not even out yet, and it's already on the long list for the Booker. And this is a very incredible writer. And, yeah, we've had Michelle LeCretzer in this little podcast area only last year, and her book Life to Come is so deceptive. It really works at this level where you think, yep, I'm getting this, I'm understanding. And then there's this engine below the surface, which is doing all this stuff to you. And you don't really realize until it all sort of comes together. And then you can't stop thinking about the damn book. But that's what I love. I love that there are some writers who can sort of turn cogs and stuff that you can't even see that are going. And then they have this lasting effect on you. They're really slowly working away at what you think and asking you deep questions about whether or not what you think is actually right and your own value system. And it just starts to tear it to pieces right in front of your face.
And I always wonder when I read a book like that, how much of it is deliberate and how much of it really is just switching into that wavelength. And like the author wrote it with all this in their head.
Yeah.
And it just sort of seeps in and like they're sort of infecting you with their way of thinking. How much of it is subconscious and how much of it is deliberate?
See, I like to think it's like a lot of it is subconscious. It's just that's why books are different, because people are different, you know what I mean? And you, every time you read a book, you learn something, because it's like talking to the author. And
but someone like George Eliot would say, oh, no.
It's deliberate.
I'm completely stuck
in. This is what I meant to do. It's a grand orchestra.
Maybe some of them really intentionally. Yeah. Every little minute thing is intentional, but I really don't think that it is. I really think a lot of it's just sort of...
Well, yeah.
Well, sometimes you can read a book that has a particular kind of structure and then you know. Like, there's no other way of doing it. You can't do this blindfolded. Like, there's no other way of creating this without having consciously done every aspect of it. Mm-hmm. And there are writers who will rewrite and rewrite and rewrite to the point where they write into messiness and they write they write out of it. And so you don't see the mess. You don't see all the strings. You don't see all the workings.
Yeah,
you just see this perfect little bit that comes out the end and you just marvel at it. Mothering Sunday, for me, Graham Swift's last novel, latest novel, he's, you get the sense of a writer who's a master. Just the sense I get is that he just flung this off on, I'm going to write a novel this weekend, and just wrote this short little novel. Of course it didn't happen that way, but that's the sense of it at the end of it. Because
like anything, when it's done by a master, it comes off looking effortless and feeling effortless. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, well, and I think that, I mean, the question of is it deliberate or not really, I think, only applies to those ones that are so, like, it's so subtle and ineffable that you can't even really express what it's done to you.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when I wonder, is this the effect, the exact effect that they wanted? And can an author ever really, like, can anyone ever really know exactly the effect their book is going to have on everyone who reads it?
No, not possible. Everybody's
and the same person reading it 3 years apart
can
have a different reaction to it, depending on what's going on in their life. That's a marvellous thing about lit, is that happens so often with these kind of books.
They're never the same when you revisit them.
Yeah. When I first read Dostoevsky, I took everything so seriously. I was a 19, 20-year-old kid reading Dostoevsky, and it was dark and it was horrible. And I thought that everything he wrote was said straight. It wasn't a joke. It wasn't any... So, and then I read it when I was in my mid-30s, and I was like, oh, you're taking the piss out of me. Because he was talking about that youthful blindness, that blinkered way of seeing everything's black and everrigthing's white and there's no in between and we're going to the barricades
tomorrow. And as a youth, you're like, yes,
yes,
damn straight.
Damn.
Yeah. And then later on, you just realize there's so many different, like, he's really just playing these games, and a lot of it is so funny. There is dark, it's still dark as hell, but that he's wanting people to explore these ideas, and there is a version of the book for the 60-year-old, and there's a version of the book for the teen, you know.
I love that. I love also we have a little bit strayed away from our original question, but not really. We're just talking about...
Not really.
It's sort of become a love letter to literature.
It has, hasn't it?
And, like, as opposed to, like, you think you don't like it, here's why you're wrong. But I think...
I think that's exactly what we're doing. We're explaining why literature is great.
Is the way it is. So for anyone who's listened to this because, you know, we hit that button and they're like, yeah, I don't like literature, like...
Mm-hmm.
So try and prove me wrong. If you're out there listening to this, has anything we said made you reassess?
I think, like, for me, again, from me 2-3 years ago to me now, what this conversation that we've done in the last 20 minutes, you've compressed what you guys have done to me over the last 2 years, you know what I mean, into 20 minutes. slowly, like, you're chipping away at that, oh, Bronwyn, this is not what you think is literature. Isn't literature, like, this is what it is. This is why you're going to like it. And then I tried a few and this, that, and the other. And now I don't go, oh, literature. I think, oh, it's just another kind of way of telling a story.
Yeah. And I think I've sort of changed my thinking in terms of, I used to be like, I don't care for these boundaries, right? I don't, everything's great. I don't care if literature is not, like,
I'll read anything.
Basically, I was ignoring
what passport?
Any kind of definition of literature versus anything else.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, slowly, and in part from actually reading John's book, which we haven't brought up in this podcast, he's shooting if looks could kill. Is that, you know, I guess I'm, like, redefining those boundaries in a way that I feel comfortable with.
Mm.
Which is that it's not genre versus literature, because that's stupid. It's like they're two different things. Literature can be genre and genre.
You've mentioned so many already. There are great romances that are literary. There are fantasy, crime, every genre you can think of.
What would you call... I often, like, when people tell me they don't like Wuthering Heights, I will often say, stop reading it thinking that it's a romance and start reading it thinking that it's, like, the best soap opera you've ever seen with, like, ghosts. And, like, what was that soap opera that – remember the one that just had dead people in it all the time, people getting possessed by demons? I'm straight so off topic now. But it was, like – and there was a little puppet Buffy. Boy. Like,
I'm, like, Supernatural.
It's like Buffy.
It's kind of like Bold and the Beautiful with ghosts.
Wow.
Like, because they follow through to the next generation.
Can you actually write that book?
That book exists, and it's called Wuthering Heights.
Okay.
You know.
I'd like to read your version, though.
I'm talking about the version that exists.
People who bump into books. I mean, I've said this before in this podcast, is sometimes it's just not the right time.
Mm.
That's true. You have to come to books at the time that is right. And if you try and force yourself to read something and you're not... You're just not at that point in your life, it won't work.
I've brought this up before. Frankenstein, when I read it, I had to read it for uni and I just couldn't do it. I did it. I read it, but I didn't really enjoy it. It was such a hard slog, but maybe now it would be a whole different experience.
Oh, I think it definitely would be.
Yeah, because I like the story.
It's really timing. That's why I used to advocate just putting these things aside. Everyone knows that Frankenstein is considered good. Everyone knows that Wuthering Heights is considered good. You can go to a Penguin section or a Vintage section, whatever it happens to be, whatever publisher you want to go with, and you can just buy them randomly over the period and build up your library. So you've got 20, 30 of these things sitting at home. So when the right mood strikes...
Yeah.
It'll be there for you.
If it's not there, it's not going to happen ever. And if you don't have them in your house, it's never going to happen. Like, Les Mis is never going to be your book unless it's hanging around and you can actually pick it up and you went, oh, I can actually get into this. Otherwise, the moment will pass.
Actually, it's a really interesting thought to wonder how many books in the world would never be read if they were only read when someone was in a bookstore going, I want to read this exactly right now.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, that never happens. I don't know about you guys. It never happens to me. Yeah. Things that I'll come home with things from the bookshop and at least half of the things will sit there for a year.
Yeah. Yes. Same. That's the thing is people get so upset about that. I'm like, no, this is called creating a home library.
Yeah.
You do this so that you can.
Aspirational reading.
And then you can do that thing which you do in shop, but you can do it in pajamas.
That's
in the house.
That's what I love doing. I love being like, I've just finished a book. I go to my bookshelf and I just stand there with, you know, my hand resting. Imagine if my hand being like, which
all
one?
That you had on your shelves were books that you'd read. I can't even imagine that.
I've been in the secondhand market for so many years. I was like, one for you, five for me, one for you. And so customers would get a couple of the books occasionally, and most of them went home. And so I've developed a library at home, which drives everyone else mad. But it means I don't, like, if all bookshops closed overnight, some terrible thing.
You'd be okay.
If Trump took over the world and became UN leader or something, and all bookshops appeared, I would have enough reading for the rest of my existence. Like, I wouldn't have to read the book, same book twice if I didn't want to.
Mine isn't that big yet, but it's growing.
Yeah, and it's more than my lifetime, so I don't even, like, I have no chance of...
What's your ratio of read books to non-read books in your personal library?
It's 1 to 100, I'd say. Like, it's...
Wow.
Yeah, because so many, when I go looking for the books I've read, I've gotten excited with a glass of wine and handed it to someone and it's never come back. So there's a bit of dribble going out there that's disappearing out of my library. But, yeah, and then some of these books I reread over and over, like my Forster problem. I just reread.
Yeah, I'm trying to, because I do a lot of rereading myself, and I'm trying to, like, realistically do a quick mental catalogue of what my ratio is.
I think I'm
sitting at about 40% read, 60% unread. But that 40% read is, like, vital. Like, and of the things that are not read, I know that some of those things won't be vital, right? So
I got really lucky, because sitting in a secondhand bookshop, you meet all these advocates for books you've never heard of. Mm-hmm. They come into you. They tell you about them. And so I have no fear of just going, yeah, I'll grab that. Like, I was in Katoomba on the weekend. I went to Pickwick's. If you've ever been to Pickwick's, it's a pleasure. And it had all these secondhand books at the bottom. And I just went, I remember you. I'll take that one. And the little collection of books that I picked up, mad. They're absolutely mad.
I love doing that so much. And I can't walk past Elizabeth's on King Street without going in, because I always know, like, within 3 minutes I'll have seen something. Last time I was in there, it was like just a couple of weeks ago, I went in because this book caught my eye on the shelf. I couldn't even see what it was. It was too thin. But something about it just said, Sarah. I walked over to it and this thin little, like, navy leather volume of something, and I pulled it out and it was Three Men in a Boat by Jerome K. Jerome, which is a book that my dad got me to read when I was quite young, that I remember just finding to be really British and funny in that British way, in a kind of P.G. Woodhouse type way, and I was like, I need this. And so I bought it because, like, even though I've read it, I know I'll read it again. And obviously that edition just needed me to own it, because otherwise why would I have seen it when I was walking past? But
that's the thing, is you cannot stop a reader from going where
into
there are
a
books,
bookshop.
Where there are books. I mean, I have access to millions of books online. I have access to books in my own library. Every secondhand bookshop I go past, I'll go in.
You can't
bookshops,
not.
I'll go in. It's just a reader thing.
If you can't go in, like, now I walk past any bookshop and I'm analysing, like, what books are in the window and what are they, you know, oh, yeah, I've seen that one, I've read that one.
And it's kind of like what you were saying about Christina said. If I know a book's out of print, I am like a bloodhound for that book. I will be like, oh, well, I have to own it. And so I'll go on eBay. I'll try and find some copy from somewhere. I'm like, if it's out of print, it ups the ante. And it's like, I must have it.
It's my precious, yeah.
Okay, we wondered. But
we
it was
really
fun.
Did.
I enjoyed myself. And this is what literature is. Literature is life. You know, this is the shortcut to life. That's what really is. If you're looking for a guide, like a handbook, to me, the best place to start looking is in the literary section.
And that was our pull quote for this. Literature is life from there on.
Pretty much. It's a great way to end it. Well, look, I hope that Sarah and John and I have convinced you listeners, if you're not into literature, to read some. And if we haven't, hit us up on social media and we will recommend a book for you. Seriously.
We'll try and find that book.
Yeah, we'll find that book.
Change your mind.
That doorway book. And thanks for joining us, everyone. And we'll catch you next Wednesday at 11 a.m.
Thanks for listening to the Booktopia podcast. Don't forget to subscribe to us on SoundCloud and iTunes. And if your eyeballs need a workout, check us out on YouTube at Booktopia TV. And don't forget, for all books featured on this episode and all episodes of the Booktopia podcast, head to Booktopia, Australia's local bookstore, at www.booktopia.com.au. Thanks for listening.